Good morning. You're watching Deprogram with Ted Rall and Jamarl Thomas. It is Monday, June 1st, 2026. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for liking, following, and sharing the show. Jamarl Thomas is on his way, or so we are told. He has the link, so I think he's just running late from his previous show. Is that basically right, Robbie?
Yeah, just running over. It's all good. But hey, I mean, no, some people actually like Robbie time. So
they do. I like Robbie time. I'm a fan of Robbie time.
Yeah, my wife likes Robbie time.
Oh, I'm not going to say I'm sure she does. I would like to think she does. I don't know that she does. Little bit of housekeeping while waiting for JT to join us. Trent, who is the Robbie's the Rumble Whisperer, and Trent is the YouTube Whisperer here. And Trent is asking me to remind everyone about, if you're watching here on YouTube live or even not live, just remember the memberships. In order to support the show, we have a three-tiered structure, which we don't always talk about very much. But it's basically $5 a month to watch and support the show. We really appreciate that. Obviously, you can watch for free as well. So it's not like required. But it is, you know, it does make you a full-fledged member. You get the notices and all that stuff. And then if you pay $20 a month, we thank you in the closing credits at the end of the show, which you may have noticed. And if you pay $50 a month, and you can do that, then you're entitled to a monthly chat with JT and I on video. So that's kind of a fun little coffee clutch kind of thing. I'm trying to think what else. Oh, we have an ad, which I guess I should go ahead and read while we're waiting for JT to join us. Is JT still on the air?
Let me see.
All right. While you're doing that, I'll read the ad. Here we go. Okay. Ba-ba-ba. Okay. We hear a lot about crypto, but here's the part most people miss. Crypto was created so you could actually own and control your own money. After the 2008 financial crisis, Bitcoin was designed as an alternative to banks. So instead of a bank holding your money, delaying transfers, or limiting access, you're in control. And if you ever had to wait for a transfer to clear, you've felt that problem. Now, fast forward to today. Everyone's heard of crypto, but getting started still feels complicated. That's why we use Rumble Wallet. It takes all that complexity and makes it simple. Choose what you want: Bitcoin, dollar-backed stablecoins, or even digital gold backed by real gold. No complicated setup. I don't know if you can get, can you get that $40 million in CIA gold through this? I just wonder.
Probably not.
Anyway, it connects with MoonPay, so you can use your credit card, debit card, or bank and be up and running in minutes. Once you're set up, you can even support your favorite Rumble creators like us directly. So do it now. Scan the QR code over my face right now, or click the link in the description and download Rumble Wallet. From there, you can set up your wallet, tap buy, and you're in the game. And in just a few minutes, you can go from hearing about crypto to actually owning some. Little more housekeeping. TMI show at 10 a.m. Eastern time today, right after Deprogram. Manila Chan will be back. This will be her first time back in over a month, so we're looking forward to that. Also here on Deprogram, JT and I are going to be answering your questions and comments directly during the 12 noon Eastern time Q&A show. So you can ask us anything and everything at that time. You can talk about the news. You can talk about not the news, whatever you want. Okay, what's going on with JT? Do we know?
He is still streaming.
He is still streaming. Yeah, is he on with Mark Sloboda by any chance?
He is. He is on with Mark Sloboda.
And, I see.
They are. So it looks
they're coffee
like,
clutching.
Yeah, I mean it is what it is. But so hey, that's okay. I mean, no,
it has to be.
listen, JT's loss is our gains, because what that means is, since he's going to blow off Deprogram, that y'all just simply get more Robbie time.
That's true. That's true. So anybody who doesn't like Robbie, you can blame JT. All right. So here's what we're talking about today. And Robbie, while you're here, you can sort of chime in and give us your thought. Chime in with your thoughts about all this. I'm very interested in what you have to think about Graham Plattner. Graham Plattner is running for Senate in Maine. This is a much high profile campaign that's been going on. Over the weekend, a former campaign manager for the campaign revealed to the press that Plattner has been sexting, she said, numerous women. The campaign says six. No indication as to whether or not there's anything beyond the digital space there, whether actually anything physical happened there or not. But anyway, the question is whether these sexually oriented improprieties, alleged, are going to matter in this campaign. We're also going to talk about, there's a lot of ICE-related stories. Four detainees at that huge detention gulag down in Texas have filed a federal lawsuit that have are alleging some fairly horrific human rights abuses. Basically, you know, we'll get into the details of that. Part of downtown Newark, New Jersey, is currently under lockdown, under curfew, after a weekend of rioting between pro and anti-ICE and ICE and also ICE themselves, and then state police and local police there in Newark. So Delaney Hall is the ICE detention facility there in Newark that we're talking about there. And then finally, there he is. And finally, there's some election results in Colombia that seem to be pointing to the possible rise of a surprise rise of a right-wing candidate, Abelardo de Espriella, and I apologize to all Spanish speakers listening to me and around the world. Good morning, Jamarl Thomas. It wasn't a surprise to hear that you were talking to Mark Sloboda, but how are you doing?
Yes, I was talking to Mark. I missed out my question. That is my fault. You have my apologies. The audience. I missed out my question. I looked up the thing. I was like, oh, damn, it's 8:55.
It's all good.
How you doing, man? You doing okay?
All right. All right. We're all right. So anyway, I set up everything. I'm kicking out Robbie. All right, JT, good to see you. So big stories today. Graham Plattner, ICE riots in Newark, yeah. ICE lawsuit in Texas, and the Colombian elections. Where would you like to start? And before I forget, as always, if you have a question,
that's interesting. Colombian elections, though, they're going to have a runoff in June. Correct me if I'm wrong.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so they're going to have a runoff in June. So the right-wing candidate apparently has won despite polling implying that they weren't expected to. And so now the runoff is going to take place. And obviously, Colombia, this is what, Petro Gustavo?
Mm-hmm.
He's
term limited out.
Petro Gustavo. Yeah. Yeah. So basically, the left wing is leaving. And there is either going to be a left-wing or right-wing candidate that basically takes over Colombia, which is going to be somewhat of a big deal for South America, especially in the context of the Trump administration and this kind of, let's say, pressure that is being applied to South America by the U.S. and this kind of Monroe Doctrine 2.0. Yeah, it's going to matter. I guess the question becomes, what does this runoff look like? And I don't entirely have an answer for it. I haven't had opportunity to talk to anybody in Colombia to figure out what the hell is going on in Colombia. You know what? Dan Caballo. I need to get him on to talk about this.
Let's do that.
Because Gustavo was suing and Caballo was his lawyer.
Oh, wow.
And so Caballo may know what's going on.
I mean, so I have friends of friends who are Colombian, and the story that I hear is that this is something that we see throughout Latin America right now, and it's not like a new problem. But there's definitely a backlash against street crime and disorder, particularly related to the drug trade. There's a general sense that the streets are out of control in the big cities there, and a lot of voters are really angry about it. So there's kind of like there's the usual clash between, you know, this very divided, economically divided, disparate country between very very rich elites and very poor working class people. But what's tipping things over, and just to be clear here, so De La Espriella, who's the conservative, he got 43.74% of the vote. His left wing number two, and who is the running against him, is Ivan Cepeda. He got 40.90%. I think, you know, by most objective standards, we would say that that's pretty much neck and neck. Yes. So You know, this was in a field of more than of multiple candidates. And so just because, by the way, just because you come out ahead in, you know, in a, let's say among seven, doesn't mean you're going to win, because it, you know, it all depends on what happens. What do the voters who supported the third, fourth, fifth candidates, where do they go? That's what's going to determine the outcome here. So, I mean, it's entirely possible that De La Espriella will not, you know, will not win, but,
right.
But he's got the wind. He's got the wind at his back, clearly, in a way that, because it was unexpected. People just didn't see him coming. So, and also, this seems to reflect a general trend also, where a lot of elections, not just in, you know, but like in Central and Eastern Europe, but also in Latin America, have been going toward the right in like under in the Trump era.
I wonder, I mean, the crime thing, fair enough, I accept that. I wonder, and maybe we look at this stuff from too high level. Like when we're looking at it, we're looking kind of down at the world, almost like a chessboard.
And like a game of risk, okay, yeah.
Yeah, there's Lula in Brazil, and there's Gustavo in Colombia, et cetera, et cetera. When really it may be basic material items on the ground that is making the difference in the way that these people are electing. Meaning they're not looking at this big picture of Trump pressuring South America. What does it mean if you have all of these right-wing, I don't want to say lunatics, but the right-wing basically taking over the various countries in South America? What does it mean? That type of stuff.
Yeah, I don't think it works. I don't think it works that way at all. Yeah, I don't think voters in any country go to the polls thinking like, "Well, what are the geopolitical implications of my vote?" Right?
I mean,
if any country was going to do that, it would be Israel, because its fate is so closely intertwined with America's. And look at them; they don't seem to take, you know, they don't vote in accordance with the way most Americans would want them to vote. They don't care.
I have a question for y'all. What does right wing mean in South America? I know what a right winger is in the United States. I am one. But what does it mean in Latin America? Define that term for me, because I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, it's going to be against the left wing is going to be pro safety net. The right wing is anti safety net, more in favor of austerity. And, you know, most of those countries have good safety nets or did.
Bolsonaro.
Right wingers are really hard on crime, to the point of being willing to, you know, violate basic human rights in order to crack down on crime. Left wingers turn a blind eye more.
Do it.
You know, what am I missing here?
Well, to me, I look at it, Malay, Bolsonaro, the lunatic in El Salvador that has made agreements with street crime and all that stuff behind the scenes that the U.S. flagrantly just ignores the fact that he's doing so. That's the way I look at it. Meaning, if you're looking at the standard for what right wing means, look at the right wing leaders who get put into power and what they do when they're in office. That's the way I look at it.
So to kind of make this dumb redneck level, right wing means safe streets, and if you're a criminal, you're going to go away forever. El Salvador is the most dangerous country in the world, and now it's probably safer than every major American city combined.
Well, I don't know about that last part, but it's definitely, everyone would report that it's definitely safer than it used to be. That's definitely true. It's basically, you know, I mean, the thing is, yeah, the tough on crime thing is a big feather in the cap of the right, but their weakness is that they're into austerity and they trash the safety net, which frankly is popular with most people.
Then how do they?
By the way, depending on the government, like if you're talking about like not Honduras, oh, what is the other one? Honduras, the one with Evo Morales.
Bolivia.
I mean, Bolivia, thank you. The right wing that took over there were just outright fascists. Right. I mean, like, so it depends on what you mean by right wing. I guess from my point of view, I started looking at the leaders of these countries and what these guys do. And sure, you could say that some of these guys are hard on crime, but I agree, the safety net thing. Like, you can't have it both ways. You can't say, okay, we're going to have people to be destitute and impoverished, et cetera. By the same token, we're going to be tough on crime. You're effectively turning people into criminals through the poverty and claiming you're being tough on crime. It depends on how you look at it.
But doesn't the get on tough crime then encourage people to come and start new businesses, whether domestically or foreign investment? Because no one wants to start a business in a place where you get looted, robbed, and murdered. So doesn't the crime problem, doesn't that then work on fixing the economic problems? Then you don't need the safety net because you get these things called jobs.
But the safety net is always-
if you think that foreign investment is that determinative, I mean, in no country really, well, I shouldn't say in very few countries, is foreign investment going to generate nearly as many jobs as domestic investment, right? You want like a vibrant domestic economy. I don't really care that much about foreign investment.
No, same here. That's my point though. Like if I wanted to start a business and if I was always getting shaken down for, you know, for money, for protection money or whatever else, and you have, you know, drug dealers just running everywhere. If that element really, is removed, then can I then start a domestic business?
No, I mean, look, that is absolutely something that is a blind spot for much of the left, including here in the U.S. I mean, you're right. I mean, I met people in former Soviet Central Asia. I met a guy. He was like an entrepreneur. He's like, oh, I used to have a pizza shop here outside the university. And in Central Asia, the main criminal gang is the police. So the police were shaking me down all the time for bribes. And they wanted so much money that they were eating up my entire profit margin, and I just couldn't stay in business. So they drove me out of business. He probably hired a few dudes to make the pizza, right? So those people are all out of work now. And you're right. Look, if you don't have law and order, and people might find this surprising coming from someone with my politics, but if you don't have law and order, you don't have anything. Nothing else matters. You don't need democracy. You don't need, you don't need free speech. None of those things matter. You've got to be able to walk out of the street without someone taking your stuff or hurting you, and you have to be able to start a business without having someone rob it and get away with it. That's true.
By the way, you also can't deprive the institutions of the state that allow law and order, that allow these things to prosper. Ecuador being one of those examples where you have a right-wing government, you have a crime-ridden country that was in large part because the right-wing government deprived that government of institutions that would have prevented the crime and the drugs in the first place. Meaning when I went to Ecuador, Ecuador was a beautiful country. Ecuador is a hellscape currently with politicians being shot in the streets. Now you could say, well, the lefties did it. The lefties didn't do that. That wasn't the left. That was depriving institutions, basically cutting funding to the various institutions, allowing those gangs and whatnot to prosper in the country itself. I'm saying, look, yes, you need law and order, but I'm also pointing out that you also need the ability for the state to be able to supply, let's say, to have a country that is not necessarily so poor that people don't turn to crime in the first place.
And these are not poor, inherently poor countries, right? I mean, these are countries with vast natural resources, they should have vibrant economies. They should be doing well. So when they're poor, it's because of disparity of wealth, usually caused by corruption. And, you know, the legacy goes back to colonialism. And often you're talking about countries that just have a few elite families that have been hogging most of the wealth. And that results. And of course, if you're an ambitious, hardworking person in a country like that, you will form and join and grow your gang, because that's the only way to make anything out of yourself. I mean,
and by the way, you should have law and order. Like, I don't think we're making an argument against law and order.
No.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I don't think that. I think, I don't see any conflict. I mean, the Soviet Union believed in law and order. I mean, communist China believed in law and order. I mean, the left, I mean, liberals aren't always good at it, but leftists usually are.
Yeah. I mean, you almost have to if you're having a socialist government. I mean, you have to.
Yeah, you really do, because there's, yeah. And we can get into all that. We've got a lot to cover and we've got a lot of comments. Thank you for your comments. Please put them in if you're watching live, 9 a.m. Eastern Time on the East Coast, and you're watching on YouTube and or Rumble. Please go ahead and put your questions in the live chat. Priority goes to the paid ones. Those are the Rumble rants and the Super Chats. But we try to get to all of them. Okay, here we go. Off to the races. I am not going to... This will be a question that I don't want to answer, F you. So, does Robbie know who wrote the Gospels and when they were written? Okay, hell, fucking put it in, but be quick, Robbie.
The answer is not definitively, probably about 40 to 50 years after Jesus resurrected. The one Gospel that we really know of for sure who wrote it was Luke.
What about John? Gospel of John?
Or John, am I getting that? Well, personally, I believe that John did, but can I prove it? No, because some people say that John of Patmos was different than the Apostle John. The Bible says that it's the same guy. Can I prove it? No, as a matter of faith. But so if you're looking for a timestamp where Robbie could say this happened, I cannot 100% say that for everybody. But I do believe that the four Gospels were written by the three apostles, and then Luke who learned under Paul.
What do you think of the Coptic Gospels that sort of hit the chopping block, hit the cutting room floor?
I'd never read them because they're not canon.
Really? The Book of Enoch is fascinating. Oh, it's fascinating.
Well, I'm sure it is, but I mean. But to talk about contradictions, I mean, that book contradicts the entire Bible. So I mean, that's one of the reasons why it's like bad sci-fi.
Wait, I'm sorry. I got access. Why does it contradict the entire Bible?
Well, talk about just how big the giants were and all this other stuff and all this other mess that it kind of goes through. It doesn't compute. Like, Goliath was about 10 feet tall. He wasn't 30 feet tall the way that the Book of Enoch kind of describes them. Like, so a giant, was just a really big dude in a day and time where people were really short. So, I mean, it's written like bad sci-fi, and you're not missing anything by not reading it.
But Ezekiel to me, it makes all the sense in the world. Like, meaning,
how many times have you read the Bible?
None, if I'm being honest. I mean, I could quote certain passages. Like that, but I haven't read the entirety of the Bible.
Scripture can never stand on its own, but I'll go away because we have a lot of stuff to do. This would be a great Rumble Premium episode, though.
Fair enough.
It's going to become a Bible study show, and there's anything wrong.
Ted, it's your fault for you keep on ducking me about the flood, and I realize that you're afraid. I realize that you're scared, and I understand. I would be scared too, mm-hmm. but it is
yeah. The flood is real. I mean, most cultures talk about a flood.
Well, including the North America was, at the bottom of a deep ocean.
Like in all of these cultures. So.
Yeah, some giant Liopleurodon type dinosaur was recently discovered, I think in Texas or someplace. Anyway, all right. P.W. Walker, thanks for the donation. People who answer to others who rape and eat babies are told to get apoplectic about a man sexting adult women. I hate this timeline. Yeah, let's talk about this, right? I mean, I find it interesting, not because of the nature of the story itself, but because of the timing of it, really, right?
What's the story? Just so I'm clear.
Graham Platner. So Graham Platner... running for, he's this lobsterman who's up in Maine, very like hard scrabble veteran. You know how there's a certain model of working class Democrat that some Democrats are pushing, like, oh, the veteran, we got to get the veteran. So we need more butch Democrats. So he's a butch Democrat running for Senate in Maine. And anyway, so over the weekend, his former campaign manager, who had quit, I guess, about a month ago, we don't know why, she told the press, I believe it was the Wall Street Journal, it spread to the New York Times, Platner's wife had alerted the campaign about a month ago, hey, by the way, this might come up, he was sexting multiple women. There's no word on whether or not he had any physical relationship with any of them.
His wife said this.
But his wife alerted the campaign, kind of like, it's sort of like you're running for office and you want you always have to tell your staff, listen, this might come up. I used this drug and that drug and I fucked this lady and that dog and blah, blah, blah. So the wife, being helpful, was like told the campaign manager back when they were friends, well, you should know this. This could come up. We're all past it. We've had counseling. We get along. Our marriage is good now. But this happened. And, FYI, should be prepared for this possible bimbo eruption, right? So anyway, that all came out over the weekend. Now Platner's spin on it is that both he and his wife are annoyed at the violation of their privacy, that they're pissed off at the former campaign manager for leaking this. I'm sure they are. And it is a violation of their privacy. That's true. And there's, you know, it raises all these questions like, is this relevant? Does it matter? You know, I think of Anthony Weiner. The voters in New York City decided, and don't forget, he represented a district that included some pretty conservative people like ultra-Orthodox Jews in Brooklyn. But the first time he got caught sexting, the voters decided they didn't care and returned him to office. And then he got caught a second time and it was like, what the fuck is wrong with you? You're out. And, you know, it's like there's all these, I mean, I guess the question is, at this, does this matter? There's the question of should and will the voters of Maine care? This was the subject, Democrats who were on the Sunday morning talkies yesterday, including what's his name from New Jersey, Cory Booker, right. You know, were asked about this, like, is this a problem? Should he pull out? And Democrats are kind of like, well, it's a little late in the process to yank your candidate for this November. I think they're kind of like in wait and see mode to see if this will blow over. Obviously, way back in 1992, Bill Clinton survived yes. Jennifer Flowers and you know, a couple others. So it's possible to survive. I mean, but I thought the thing is, in 2026, should we care? I mean, we're talking the president of the United States. We know about, you know, he paid off a porn star to shut up about, you know, fucking her in his marital bed, right? It's like, should it matter? I mean, I don't think it should matter, but will the voters, but objectively, should it matter? I don't care who my politicians fuck, as long as they're like not fucking me.
Carlos Danger. That was Anthony Weiner's nickname when he was
Carlos sexy. Danger.
Carlos Danger. That's so badass. Carlos Danger. that's so badass. Maybe it's me being a guy. I don't care. Like, I don't know what women think. I don't care at all. I mean,
well,
like,
you know the argument against it, right? The argument is it reveals character. If someone can't be trusted to keep their oath, their marital oath, then, you know, can they be trusted to keep their constitutional oath? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I get the argument, but I care more about what he does in office. Mm-hmm. And I get the argument. It's like, well, how do you trust a guy that you can't trust him in regards to the marriage?
Well, okay, human beings are complicated, right? I mean, he's a complicated man. I mean, he, you know, by his own account, he suffered from PTSD. He did multiple tours of duty in Iraq and Afghanistan, came back very fucked up. Obviously, you know, take one look at him, you know, he's no stranger to the bottle.
Right.
You know, I mean, and like, frankly, that's got to be okay. Cause I mean, that's a lot of Americans, right? I mean, so, are we just going to say, like, oh, we write you off because you're imperfect? Or
just so I'm clear, you mean the bottle is most Americans or the PTSD? Because
the bottle.
I don't want to vote in an alcoholic. That would be a deal breaker for me. An alcoholic, full stop, would be a deal breaker.
Really?
That would be where my grandfather was an alcoholic. I don't trust him at all. And
look at Richard Nixon. He did a fine job.
You think Richard Nixon did a fine job in office? I don't think Richard Nixon did a fine job. And it's not like Newt Gingrich, where they said Newt Gingrich kept divorcing or leaving or cheating on women with cancer because he loved the country so much. Do you remember that argument? That Newt Gingrich loved the country too much. That's why he kept cheating on his wife. It's like, what?
No, he's just a dog, like a lot of politicians.
Right. The alcohol thing will be a deal breaker. The cheating won't. I think men cheat. Most men I know cheat. It's not, this is a good thing. And maybe I don't know what that says about me. I've never cheated on my wife. But I guess my point is most men that I know.
A lot of, and most women cheat too, by the way. But
yes. Oh, let's just say most people cheat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that can't be my deal breaker. Alcohol, that could definitely be a deal breaker for me, even if it's just personal.
Interesting. Yeah. Would not be a deal breaker for me.
You mean alcohol won't be? No. Or cheating?
Neither. No, I don't care. I mean,
really?
Nah.
You don't care if the guy's a loser.
Dementia, I would care. Yeah. I mean, that was like you're literally just your brain. The thing about alcoholism is it can break your brain. And when it breaks your brain, then you gotta be gone. But it doesn't always break your brain. LBJ was an alcoholic. I mean, you know, all those guys in the 50s drank like fish. You know, I mean, America ruled the world. You know, it's like.
He got us into Vietnam. Come on, dude.
I think I got us into Vietnam, but all right. And JFK.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, he's one of the double downs. Like, oh, no, this sounds like a great idea. So he has to go in on a full-on bender, start throwing darts at a map. So we're going to bomb there.
He wasn't throwing darts at the map, but I think your broader point, yeah.
No, granted, some of your biggest heroes are mass-murdering, scum-sucking bastards, so it doesn't surprise me that LBJ would be up there, but come on, man. That's
Winston Churchill, not one of my favorites, but considered a great drink, like a monster, like a beast. Love bar, man.
I mean, and also, I'll go away after this, but maybe you're asking someone to swear an oath to the Constitution, to uphold the Constitution. Well, simultaneously give him a pass who breaks every other oath that he makes. You break your oath to the most important person in your life, which is your spouse. You're a rabid dog and just do whatever is well, but you want. But you expect this one promise that he'll keep.
Well, okay. All right. Listen, the resident moralist here. Get back on here. Are you going to tell him? he's like refusing to come back on. Is sexting cheating?
No, yes. It's stupid. It's not cheating.
Yes, it's cheating.
So for example, let's asking: is watching pornography, you know, a sin? Is lusting after another woman?
Is masturbation a sin? I know someone whose wife, hates the fact that he masturbates, even though she won't have sex with him.
Really?
No.
Yeah. He's just trying to prevent prostate cancer, man.
So here's how you would do this: This is going to come down to the religious argument versus the legal argument, okay? Jesus said if you looked after a woman and you lust after her, then you've committed adultery already and you need to atone
for that. Jimmy Carter, I committed lust in my heart.
But on the flip side, though, adultery is sleeping with another man's wife. Fornication is sleeping with someone that you're not married with.
Correct.
Those are a physical act. Like, I'm married to Kizzy. If I look at another woman, I say, damn, no, she's hot. I mean, I've committed adultery in my heart, but I have not broken my vow to Kizzy because I'm a human, white-blooded, heterosexual male. Okay. Agreed. That's going to happen. If there's a girl walking down the street and she's got a nice rack on her, I'm going to notice. It's like, she has a nice rack. That does not mean I'm going to take her home and cheat on my wife with her. You're asking me to accept someone who broke a vow to the most important person in that person's life.
Wait. Grant Plattner, just to be clear, I have to assume he probably did go balls deep in at least one of these ladies. But let's just assume for the sake of argument that he kept his lobster in its cage where it belongs. It's just like fucking around in the digital space. It's fantasy life. I mean, he doesn't even really know that there's necessarily a woman on the other line, right? I mean,
gross hairy dude. Cheating.
Sorry?
Just to clarify.
Say again?
Do you consider sexting cheating?
Oh. Not really. No. I mean, really? I don't think I think it's like it's problematic and rude and something that, you know, I would talk to my wife about. But like, I mean, I would certainly not be like, oh, we're getting divorced, I'm leaving you. Like, of course not. That's ridiculous.
But it's just like some people use chatbots. They'll talk to a chatbot, and then they'll do that with the chatbot. Is that
cheating?
Or how about fucking a sex bot? Would fucking a sex robot be cheating?
Well, a sex robot doesn't have a soul, in a way that Robbie would say.
It's not alive.
Yeah.
True. But a person is.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And so that's the whole issue that I have with what you're saying, Ted. Like, you wouldn't have a problem with someone, you know, who is a rampant cheater and breaks their promises. Because
I worked for Ted Kennedy's campaign. This person.
You're leaning on this person to keep an oath to the Constitution. Mm-hmm. While you know this person breaks every other promise that he has.
So I know that he breaks one promise.
Yeah, not every other promise.
I mean, he's not breaking every other promise. I'm sure when he's I'm sure that like when he signs that long thing, you know, when you renew your iOS and you're like, you agree to all the terms that Apple tells you. Yeah, I'm sure he adheres to those, or his promise to pay his phone bill every month or whatever.
Well, those are different. Those are bills he has to pay. And if he doesn't, then he loses the service. Like, for example, I'm married. Both of y'all were married. None of y'all ever cheated. Why not? Because you honored your vow. That's why I haven't cheated on my wife. I honored my vow.
Yeah, but
now, if I'm going to run for public office, and the only thing I'm going to give you is that I promise you I'm going to do these things. But if you go through and you see that I've broken the promises that I have, that my word means nothing.
But here's the thing. I don't see any pattern here. I haven't noticed that people who are, you know, Dick Nixon was very loyal to his wife. He worshiped the ground that she walked in. He adored her, never cheated. You know, what good does it do America? Nothing. He was a shitheel and fucked up the country big time. I mean, who cares? It's like there's lots of politicians who don't fuck around, and you know they fuck around on us, on we the people.
Yeah,
well, you're making my point. It's about judgment, but character also has to matter. I mean,
the question is how do you assess character, right?
One of the things, what was it, John Adams, who said that the Constitution will only work for a righteous and moral people, because those are the kind of people who can self-govern. If you have a bunch of people who the law is literally the law of the jungle, you cannot have a liberal small L government system, because at that point you need to have a police state or you have chaos in the streets.
I know, but that's what we have anyway.
And yeah. I understand that, but that's because our national character sucks.
No, I get that. But I don't know if that's directly related to the fact that the person cheated on their wife.
Well, there's kind of people.
I mean, I feel like these are separate concerns.
Besides which, the thing is, what you don't, I mean, nobody knows like why people cheat. I mean, you know, the thought is people cheat because they can. People cheat because they're horny. But there's a lot more to it than that, right? I mean, sometimes there's, there's abuse going on. There's sexual withholding. There's sexual dysfunction. You know, some people just have, like, I imagine that a guy like Graham Plattner with PTSD probably has a whole big empty hole in his heart that he's trying to fill maybe with pussy. If I were going to judge someone who's running for Senate, I'd be like, well, did you run for political office previously? And when you served there, how did you perform? That's literally the most important thing. I don't care if the chef at my local diner is cheats on his wife, as long as he washes his hands afterwards before he cooks my meal. I just want the food to be good.
But he's not passing the laws that you live under. That's the difference. It all comes down to scale. So for example, let's just say that y'all lived here in Flathead County in Montana, and I was going to run for county commission or run for the first congressional seat here to replace Ryan Zinke. First of all, would y'all vote for me? And second of all,
why? I would vote for you, and I'll tell you why. I'd vote for you because you have a lot of things that I really look for. You have values that are mostly good values and that you live by. And also you're a man of honor. You don't have to have everything written down. You mean what you say, you say what you mean. So yeah, I would vote for you. I'm not sure I'd vote for you for president, but I'd vote for you for, you know, a lot of offices. And the reason not vote for you for president is because, you know, I think you're too mean to immigrants.
I'm not mean to them. I want them to go home. That's not mean.
That's mean.
It's not mean. I want them to go home. They can go home and make their countries better. That's a good thing.
Depends on the country.
Yeah. I mean, if you were willing to say, lock the doors now and kick out the criminals, and everyone else can stay, but no one else new comes, I'd be like, we're in. You got my vote.
Well, the problem is that's been the policy for since Reagan, and look where we are.
Yeah, but you're a man of honor. You don't cheat on your wife. You could keep that promise.
But I'm not a king. I'd be president for 4 years or less unless I got assassinated. So, I mean, no, there's that.
Well, but there's always going to be someone coming after. That's true about any promise you would make then. Like, well, it's like that's neither here nor there, right? Like your term's going to come to an end.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, I guess so that's the point that I'm trying to make, though. I mean, you said I was a man of honor. If I was cheating on Kizzy, could you say I was a man of honor? that my word meant anything?
It would affect my view of you.
What about you, JT?
Would I vote for you? Depends on what you were advocating for.
Small government, closed borders, pulling out of NATO, shutting down all the foreign military bases, truly going America first. The 150,000 soldiers that are there in Germany, I put every damn one of them on the Mexican and Canadian borders, and I would make Fortress America. I would fix every bridge. I would make infrastructure the number one priority, and I would have mass deportations done humanely and according to the Constitution.
All right, we should get into deportations, but go ahead.
Yeah, you'd have it. I mean, even for you'd still have it. You have more positives than negatives.
All right. Quick question here from Eric Spate. Thanks for the $2. What's this about merging the U.S. and Israeli militaries? I have not heard this.
Okay. So Congress is quietly pushing an amendment, or I should say a bill, to I'm going to use the term fuse the Israeli and the U.S. military in regards to science, technology, operations, et cetera. And
not command and control.
I don't know. That's unclear. Okay. That's unclear. I mean, the reality of it is some people are questioning whether or not if there was a draft that Americans will have to serve for the IDF. It depends on how extreme the legislation ends up being, but they are quietly pushing to fuse science, technology, et cetera, with the Israeli military. The Congress member, in fact, I could pull it up because I got it saved on my...
Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. This can't be going anywhere, right? I mean, well, Israel is less popular than STIs. I mean...
Well, that's why people are freaking out about this, because they're like, how the hell... are you doing this now when Israel is, as you point out, as popular as head lice? But let's see, the representative, I can find this if you give me a moment. But yeah, that is one of the things that has effectively popped up, that one of the Congress members or two of the Congress members are trying to fuse the U.S.
That's crazy. Yeah. Even the thought, I mean, look, I can't imagine this is going anywhere, but even the fact that it's even being discussed as a possibility shows how incredibly wildly out of touch these people are.
It is. So I mean, Mike Rogers from Alabama, Adam Smith from Washington have introduced the United States-Israel Defense Technology Cooperation Initiative as part of the National Defense Authorization Act for 2027. The initiative would expand U.S.-Israeli military cooperation with joint research, testing, manufacturing, and sharing of technology, as well as promoting joint military training, information sharing, network integration, and data fusion. Basically, the U.S. military and the IDF are going to get much, much closer together if this passes.
Right. So it's not a merger per se, but it's like...
It's not a merger in the sense of fusing, but obviously...
It's a really big cooperation agreement.
Yes.
Which we already... Look, let's face it. We already do cooperate a lot.
But it's in the law. And by the way, part of the reason that they're saying, well, we don't need to really give them the $20 billion a year or the $15 billion, whatever we give them, is because of this. Basically saying we don't need to give it to them because we can now create this integration in a more direct sense.
I don't think the United States should have anything to do with Israel.
No.
At all. I mean, I'm not even sure we should have diplomatic relations at this point. Although generically, I feel like we should have diplomatic relations with every country just because it's important to talk. But I don't know beyond that. We shouldn't have cozy relations, that's for sure. Okay, let's, if you're okay with it, let's talk about, let's do some more comments here because we do have some good ones that need to be talked about. FUSO, is getting blown by Laura Loomer a deal breaker?
Yes. Yes.
Is that, does that refer to anyone specifically?
No, anyone who would put their penis in Laura Loomer's mouth is insane by definition.
I would worry about it being bitten off.
Yes, she's nuts.
I mean, she's definitely vagina dentata.
Yeah. There's a line by Cannabis. He's a rap star. He says Cannabis would, what do you say? No. I'm thinking of RZA. where he was talking about Grace Jones. He says, Bobby, fuck Grace Jones. And the reason he said that was because he was, because, you know, at the time, Grace Jones was like Amazon. she was wild. And he was trying to show how badass he was for hooking up with Grace Jones. I'm saying the same thing with Loomer. Loomer is nuts.
Oh.
It's nuts.
I mean, yeah. But here's the thing. Like, I'll give her credit. If she's not nuts, it's like Ann Coulter, where she's putting on this insane show. And yes, that's just, in a way, that's worse. Like, you know, like, well, yeah, that's like the Rush Limbaugh grift, right? I mean, Rush Limbaugh voted Democratic. I mean, it was all a fucking act. And that's disgusting.
Alex Jones, same thing, right? I thought he was serious. After a while, I was like, he has to be doing an act. And yeah. And what made me think, I was like, it's a really good act. Like, he's so good at it. Let me ask you, do you think Alex Jones is an act? Or do you think he's serious?
I have to think he's an act, yeah.
I think he's an act.
I think he's a carnival barker. It's just for fun. It's just for the Benjamins. I think it's, you know, it has real world consequences, so therefore it's horrible.
The gay fish or the gay frogs and all that shit. I remember he came out one day when Trump bombed Syria for the first time. And Alex Jones, I sat there and watched him for like 30 minutes. That's how good he was. And I was like, this is so good. And it made me realize why people watch Alex Jones. It's like the 5-10% of the shit that he says that's true. And then the other shit. But when he's hitting on something, he's hitting on it. And like when he's doing it, he's doing it. And I was sitting there like, A, he's right about the Syria thing. B, it is impressive that he can carry on this. He does it on the fly. Like when Alec, he's riffing. Like he's not, I don't think he's like writing stuff down and then coming out and giving a speech. I think he is on the fly putting that hat on. It's impressive.
Well, I mean, come on. You and I can do the same thing. I mean, you know, but all right, here we go.
Yeah, but goddamn.
John V. Cockefeller, thanks for the buck. I could never cheat on my wife because she handles all the social stuff and she'd have to set it up for me.
See, you know, what I used to do is I used to always introduce, I would be like, yeah, my wife is this, my wife is that, which runs into problems now because I still talk like my ex-wife or my ex-girlfriend. And recently, this woman that ended up being someone insane, she was like, you bring up your ex a lot. Yeah. So I guess I'm in the friend zone. It's like, well, actually, I didn't regard you one way or the other. I don't like being put on the spot where I need to answer a question one way or the other sometimes. And this is one of those times.
It's very weird when people are like sort of like jealous of your ex. It's like, listen, your ex is the one person on the entire planet you least need to be jealous of, because it's like you divorced that person, right? Yes. I mean, you're, you know, unless you're, you know, Liz Taylor and Richard Burton, you're probably not getting back together, right?
No, I don't even.
So like, yeah, it's weird. I mean, like there's, I know all these examples, usually guys who like, you know, marry a woman and they're like, you know, they won't allow them to have a photo of their, like along with the family, like no family photos of the ex-husband around. And I'm like, that's fucked up. Yeah. I mean, that's part of the person's history.
It's part of my life. It was part of my life for 10 years.
Yeah. Like, why should you expunge her? You shouldn't. Right. It would be weird. All right. So we have, 11 minutes left. We've got to talk about ICE. So I'm a little less interested, even though it's horrific, because we already know. Godspeed to the detainees who have filed this class action, hopefully class action lawsuit against the ICE facility down there in Texas. Here's a quote from the lawsuit. Detained people are regularly subjected to severe beatings or sexual harassment by guards, squalid living conditions, spoiled and inadequate food. Yeah, I heard that 2 pieces of bread is the standard menu for the day. Like, you know, what is this, Les Miserables? Or squalid living conditions, no meaningful programming or recreation. And let's bear in mind, these are not criminals. These are people who are illegal, allegedly, not convicted, allegedly illegal immigrants. No inadequate access to basic hygiene products such as soap, razors, or nail clippers, outbreaks of disease, and limited or no access to sunlight. I read about a guy who got penis cancer. I guess penis will be the theme of today's show. And his dick literally fell off because at that place in Texas, they did not. Whoa. Yeah, his dick rotted off because even though he kept complaining, and he fucking died of dick cancer because he never got any medical care. I mean, most jails, right? Like most prisons, like if you're, I always tell people that they don't know that, right? Like if, let's say you have asthma, I do. They won't let you, you can't bring your inhaler with you to jail if you're arrested, like in a, you know, they're like, fuck you. If you need SSRIs, you can't bring those. You know, whatever, that you don't get any medical care. John Kiriakou talked about when he had a cavity. The dentist said, listen, the only thing we do here in prison is we pull teeth. So, you know, try to suck it up, buttercup, until you get out. Otherwise, I can pull your tooth. I mean, that's our system. It's horrific. But so this stuff doesn't really surprise me. But I'm really interested in your thoughts, JT, in what's going on in Newark. So over the weekend, basically, there's been running street battles outside the Delaney Detention Facility in Newark, putting the mayor of Newark, Ross Baraka, who's a progressive, into a very tough spot. Baraka has declared a curfew, 24-hour curfew around the facility. There's pro-ICE, anti-ICE doing battles with New Jersey State troopers, as well as local Newark PD, and ICE is no longer, you know, policing the facility outside. But this is almost like, okay, I'm just going to say it. I am so proud of the anti-ICE protesters who are making things spicy over there. They are, I mean, treating it the way it should be treated, like the Bastille. The place should be stormed. All these places should be. The places, the gates should be stormed. The gates should be knocked down. These people should be liberated. I mean, because of the conditions. I mean, it's not the fact that, you know, these are, that I'm not, I don't disagree with the idea that law should be enforced, but this is its own lawlessness committed by the state, the way that it's being done. You know, you can't just arrest people and then, you know, rape them, starve them, deprive them of medical care. You know, if you do that, then those people have a right to walk.
I think I take issue, well, obviously, with the conditions. The conditions in and of itself are horrific. So put a pin in that one for the moment. I think I take more issue with the way ICE has been given the license to behave across the country. It's acting like its own Gestapo force. I mean, this is not just going after people who are, you know, criminals, quote unquote. Some of these people were Americans. When they were raiding the building, that apartment building, they were going after Americans also.
And yeah, many if they're times, a little taupe, they might not be real Americans. That's like the racist shit that I was seeing online. Over the weekend, there was soccer hooliganism in you know, in Paris, right? And then and when I first read it, I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know it had to do with soccer. And there were all this right wing images, and you know, they're like, look. You know, France is being invaded by foreigners. Look, they don't even, like Ben Johnson, like they don't even look like French. I'm like, French people can be black, yo.
Yes.
You know, it's like many of them are. I know, because when I go to the consulate to get my passport renewed, you know, I sit next to them. It's just, you know, so foul. But I mean, go ahead. You were saying.
It's, well, no. You're absolutely right. Many people would say, well, that guy doesn't look American. Okay, what the hell does that even mean? Right? Like, they were going after people. Many of those people were Americans. They were getting caught up in regards to it. I take issue with this Gestapo shit that Donald Trump is effectively pulling. No, he can't necessarily put the U.S. military on home soil, ideally. But, of course, there are all sorts of other agencies that you can effectively use in lieu of the military, ICE being one of them. And, you know, there's this thing like, if ICE is grabbing me and I tell a cop I'm an American, the cop is not going to do shit about the fact and protect my rights. My ass is going into a detention center by hook, by crook, or by
assuming hook. That it's really ICE. I mean, look, we're kind of taking it on faith that these goons in masks who don't have any ID or even badges or anything are, look, there's been documented cases, a bunch of them, of people pretending to be ICE, kidnapping women and raping them. So it's like, I'm ICE, come with me. I mean, you can't have it. You can't. I mean, we talked earlier in the show about lawlessness in Latin America. I mean, you talk about lawless. I mean, if you can be walking down the street and random guys in balaclavas come out of an unmarked car and drag you in and take you away, God knows where, to do God knows what. You don't have law and order in your society. I mean, these are paramilitaries, are not a sign of a modern first world country.
True. It's outrageous. Like, I mean, Obama didn't do this. And Obama would deport like 3 million people. And I would wager to you that the end of Trump's term, Obama would have still deported more people.
Agreed.
I could be wrong, but we'll see. But I suspect Obama still would have deported more people without the social upheaval.
I guess the difference is that Obama deported them more from the border, right? Like he turned them away at the border and then kept them in kids in cages and then threw them out, as opposed to, you know, Trump's approach, you know, trolling the streets and dragging them off like they're, Ukrainian military looking for draftees.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think these people are doing God's work. And mainly because...
And I think it's important for people like us to sort of support them, because I think it's like really, like, they're, you know, on the left among liberals, violence is always verbatim. Any kind of, you know, like, well, you know, we should write a very strongly worded letter.
I'm not one of those people.
Dudes on stilts, that's cool.
People draw costumes.
Yeah. I'll draw like a cartoon with a lot of cross-hatching. That'll make a big difference. Honestly, you got to have events like this to bring it home. I wouldn't say out of control. I would say we have an unleashed paramilitary organization financed by the U.S. taxpayer. And they're dangerous and scary. And honestly, the biggest threat to American democracy today, because they can easily be deployed against, you know, not non-immigrants.
Yes. And in some respects, they are.
Yeah.
Yeah, terrifying. That should not be part of a modern country. We should have laws.
Let's do some comments. Horses are people. Illegal immigration is a crime, so yes, they're criminals. You're not a criminal until you're convicted, though.
True.
And I believe under our law, illegal immigration is an administrative offense, right? It's not a...
I thought it was.
I don't think it's a crime. I don't think you're violating... I don't think it's a criminal offense.
It's a misdemeanor.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's a misdemeanor.
All right.
Because we're not a serious country. Mexico, illegal immigration is a felony. Think about that. Here in the United States... You come across the border, you're going to depress wages, you're going to screw over the American people. Come on in. We need you because you're stupid. Sorry, Americans are too lazy to work. This is a complete joke. Deport them all.
You pull a decent wage. They'll take the jobs.
Yeah. Well, so just a reminder, some housekeeping. TMI show coming up in about a minute. Manila Chan is finally back from maternity leave. So stay tuned for that. And of course, here on Deprogram, if you had some questions you wanted to ask, especially if you're willing to pay, please be willing to pay, because that's what keeps this show going. The Q&A show is Monday and Wednesday. Today is Monday, 12 noon Eastern time. In other words, 2 hours from now, just pipe in live in the YouTube and the Rumble chat, and JT and I will answer your questions, all of them, if we can. We always try to. Thanks, everyone, for joining us, and we will see you later. Bye, JT. See you in a couple hours.
Have a good one. I'll see you in 12.
Okay. Where am I here? Here we go.